Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight our favorite show is Voltron, Legendary Defender. Tonight we'll be discussing Season 3, all seven episodes of it. You know what? Fuck it. Fuck it all. Just hang on.
Here comes the turkey.
Oh, it's a living, huh?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Hang on.
Let's try this again. Tonight, our favorite show is Voltron, Legendary Defender. We'll be discussing Season 3, all seven episodes of it. This is TV Party Tonight, and I am your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And that voice you heard mumbling up, here comes the turkey, is the turkey himself, the metal coop, Mr. Robert Cooper. How do you do, sir?
I was going to make chicken sounds, but then I realized I don't know if turkeys make chicken sounds. So I will go with the Pokemon approach. Turkey.
Wouldn't turkeys gobble, but chickens begaw? Like chickens go, but turkeys go, gobble.
I can do like a boogie. Like I walk around my house clucking like a chicken for fun. I don't think I have a very good gobble. So again, turkey.
It's what's for dinner, Dick. Anyway, speaking of what's for dinner. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who, after about a minute of this, decided he no longer wanted to be here with us. The host of the 411 Ground and Pound radio show and the host of Damn You Hollywood, Mr. Robert Winfrey, how do you do, sir?
I do not have a bird sound that I feel qualified making for all of you, so I feel I'm already behind the eight ball as far as that goes.
All right. We all watched the first two seasons of Voltron. I believe at least one of the shows we did on TV Party Tonight, actually, Winfrey ended up substituting for Robert because Robert was somewhere in the wind. Is that correct? Am I right about that?
I was in the 30-degree weather of the Lowe's Garden Center. Yes, sir.
Okay. But we did get to both of them, didn't we? As I recall, we have reviewed both seasons one and two. We had to have. I know we did. We had to.
We did. I even finished season two on the way to watching season three. Look at me go.
Outstanding. All right.
Your professionalism knows no bounds.
Let's kick off the discussion of season three by talking about the elephant in the room. It's seven episodes as opposed to the usual 10, 12, or 13, and if you're really fancy schmancy, 22 or 23. Seven episodes seems a little abbreviated. According to something that I just saw on YouTube, someone from Collider, whose name doesn't bear mentioning, went to the San Diego Comic-Con panel for Voltron, and apparently this is how it's going to be done from now on. They're going to do abbreviated seasons, but release more of them per year. So we're getting season four in October, and presumably we'll get season 5 and 6 and 7 over the course of 2018. I'll start with you, Mr. Cooper. How do you feel about more abbreviated seasons as opposed to less, longer, more traditional seasons?
Oh, I mean, I feel like it's a good thing and a bad thing. In terms of just the negative aspect of it, it does kind of hurt in a way giving a complete story for a season. It leaves me things more segmented, and I feel like can also make it to where, I don't know, I feel like it can be forgotten in some ways. Like, you don't get your big burst of a, here's the whole season, watch it all. It's more in chunks, but at the same time, I feel like it's probably a little easier on the animation team. I feel like the animation was a little better this time. I mean, the animation ain't fucking movie quality. We all know that. But it was pretty well done. I feel like it's a cost-cutting measure as well as just kind of easier on their labor force. I noticed with the Castlevania Netflix series, it was 4 episodes, which gave them a way to dry run the whole thing. So, I mean, I'm pretty cool with them doing it if it means that we get consistent output instead of having to wait, like, I don't know, like, why we got to wait a whole... Well, we're going to wait a whole year for Orange is the New Black, even though I don't watch that show. I feel like it's mostly positive, not to mention it's not going to be as perhaps as grindy as certain things, like the Japanese animation industry. Nothing says like working 60 hours a week, 52 weeks a year for $19,000 a year.
As an aside, Cooper, is the Castlevania series worth doing a podcast on? It's a yes or no question.
As a whole, yes. In its current state,
as a whole, yes.
I mean, we could squeeze something out of those 4 episodes. I mean, I could do it. You know, I fucking love wall turkeys in Castlevania. It is best girl. But I feel like it'd be better suited once we get the entire story.
Was that a yes or a no? Because all I know is that Castlevania is 4. It's 4 episodes. Should we talk about them or not?
Well, I mean, they're coming out with 8 more later.
I'm moving on from
the wait for the rest of the series to wait for the rest of the season to come out. The 4 episodes
that
they stand
are
a great
that in
introduction,
English.
But they're nothing more than that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not worth talking about until the full complete season comes out, is what you guys are saying. There's another 8 episodes. So
yeah.
Okay, so when you have the whole 12 in hand, that's when we should talk about it.
See.
Robert Winfrey. Voltron, Legendary Defender, Season 3, 7 episodes, as opposed to the full 10, 12, 13, 22, or 23. What do you think? What are your thoughts? How do you feel? What's your burning desires?
I don't mind it so much. One of the things that Netflix has going for it with series like this is they have a lot more latitude when it comes to production elements. It's helped narrative in many stories in the sense that they don't have to end the first couple of episodes on cliffhangers, desperately hoping that they get renewed by networks. And in this instance, if it makes things a little bit easier, I'm okay with it. I mean, it does reduce the ability to just binge watch, you know, a complete narrative for, you know, as many shows as you can get a full narrative in a single season. And, you know, some shows you can, some shows you can't. In this case, there's a serious end game planned out here with this show. This is not fly by the seat of your pants territory. There's clearly plans for how this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if this just makes things a little bit easier on everyone involved, I have no complaints about it. My bigger gripes come from, you know, when you do, because 7 episodes could reasonably be considered half a season.
Yeah.
So what we have here is the first half of a season of television. I was more annoyed with stuff like 7 Deadly Sins, where they put a big, they make kind of a big push for, well, it's season 2, and then it's literally 4 episodes that constitute an intermission between. They're like all takes place chronologically within the final episode of the first season. So
well, yeah,
that one bothered me more.
Well, that's what they get for taking a damn OVA series and being like, "Hey guys, look, second season," and it wasn't a very good OVA series either. which I find Seven Deadly Sins a little generic for your shonen tropes, but it's solid.
All right. My thoughts real quick, and then we'll get into discussing the content of the season. I was disappointed initially when, you know, suddenly, you know, like I'm watching the, we'll call it the season finale, where they go back and they tell you the whole history of Voltron and the Galra and the Altinians and all that. Altinians?
Altaians.
And all of us, Altaians.
Altinians.
And then all of us, Altidians. All titties, all the time.
Starts Motorboat Boys and Girls.
And, you know, and so, like, I'm sitting there with my kids. This is last weekend. I'm watching this on a Saturday with my, or Friday rather, with my kids when it dropped. It was Friday. Almost a week ago now. And, you know, like, I'm paying attention, but I'm figuring I have at least 3 or 4 more episodes to go before I really have to dig in and focus on what's happening. Because, you know, with the past 2 seasons, there was always a couple of, like, not totally, like, throwaway, completely meaningless episodes, but definitely a couple of episodes where we had some fun, like when Voltron goes to the mall. Remember that, Coop? We love that episode.
That was my favorite filler.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm expecting there to be some filler here, so I'm just kind of like, huh, okay, you know, let's get to what's going to happen this time. How are they going to scatter the Voltron force, or who are we going to lose this time? And then all of a sudden, I'm getting that, you know, if you liked Voltron, you'll love Sex and the City. I'm like, wait, what the fuck? So I'm like, it's over already? And then I had to read, and then I went back and I looked at, you know, I had to go back and see how many episodes there were. And I'm like, holy shit, there's only 7 episodes. Now, after doing some research and I see what they're doing, you know, I don't know. I'm not totally opposed to the idea of mini seasons, which is the only other way I can describe this, label it in my own mind. I get the point of it. I just, when I dig into an entire series, I expect at least, like even when I watched Harlots was only 8 seasons, but at least these were 8 episodes. But at least they were hour-long episodes, you know? There was a lot packed into an hour, so I didn't feel gypped when it was over. This, I kind of felt gypped. Maybe that's just me, but I feel like they barely got started on this story, and then it was over. And now you got to wait for the next season for, you know, to see what's going to happen next. So that's kind of it definitely left me wanting more, but not in a positive sense. In a, hey, there wasn't enough TV here. There wasn't enough story for me to feel satisfied. Hurry up with the season 4 already. That's where I got left last Friday when it was over. And I've had a week to think about it, and I kind of still feel that way. But they're not just making this for me. They're making it for various people. So it is what it is. And maybe by season 4, now that I know that it's going to be an abbreviated season, I will have gotten used to it and not be so annoyed. So with that being said, we left season 2 with Shiro Dungon missing, and Zarkon going into, I guess, a coma. They had defeated him. He's on life support when we leave season 2, and Hagar summons Prince Lotor to carry the flag. So I've got the Wikipedia in front of me here, and the summation goes like this. It's the changing of the guard, episode 1, season 3. The paladins must adjust to using only their lions until they can figure out a new means to form Voltron. As they free the people of Fuega, Zarkon's son Lotor takes over the Empire in his place and covertly begins a nefarious plan. So what we have here is them dealing with life after Shiro. Keith is still trying to find him out there. Keith is not ready to give up on Shiro. Meanwhile, Voltron still has a job to do, and they're doing it with only the Lions available. They don't have actual Voltron. And we get to see sort of life after the Galra Empire is defeated. You know, now, you know, the hunter has become the hunted, as it were. Now that they have these free people of the Empire, now they got to actually protect them from a Galra Empire that has been defeated, but they're not gone. There's still elements there that are wanting to take back their, these recently freed people. So I'm going to throw it over to you guys. What did we think of episode one, Mr. Robert Cooper?
Well, I was like, I guess Shiro is gone. I was kind of surprised. I mean, I knew he wasn't dead. At least I'd hoped he wasn't dead. I thought it'd be a bold move if they did make him dead. But the way they were switching around the lines, if I'm not mistaken, it was in more of the order that matches the original show.
Yes.
Yeah. So you got your she's in pink. Laura's in pink. Of course, she's in pink. I thought overall, like the first episode, I thought it was pretty good. That wasn't necessarily something. I don't think it was as good as some of the later episodes, but I felt like it was a pretty good foundation for kind of what is this season going to be. It sets up a lot of our plots, the search for Shiro, everybody getting used to their new seats, Keith trying to become leader, even though I really liked him as a leader. Like, I liked the fact he wasn't very good at it to start with. It's good. Makes him relatable.
Yeah, some of the reviews I had were very happy that Keith didn't just take the leadership like a duck to water, that he sucks at first, and he has to sort of grow into the role. Winfrey, what did you think of episode one, season three?
Sorry, what was that?
What did you think of the episode?
What?
Fucking
on,
pay attention. Take your meds.
There was just stuff going on around me. My apologies. My dogs. They're happy.
Because I'm around,
terrific.
I'm sure.
Tell those people there's a show going on. Be professional and let you pay attention.
Yes, I'm sure my dog will absolutely acquiesce to your request.
Yeah, you tell him to knock it off. Tell him I said so.
Yes, that will go very well. I agree with you guys as far as, you know, it's something that he has to kind of grow into. It's one of the strongest suits of all of these, all the seasons so far of this show, is they actually have characters that have positives and negatives, that have, you know, things that they're good at, things that they're not good at. And even when they're growing, which they do significantly throughout this season in several respects, it doesn't come easily. There's a lot of growing pains that come along with change, and they actually went through the effort to show most of that. I kind of, and you know, not just Keith being, you know, not necessarily having the best judgment the first couple of times he's trying to lead the team. Lance, I believe it is, that winds up switching Lions, and he's got to look. I mean, there's, and he at that point winds up having to adjust to just how this other one pilots. You know, the idiosyncrasies that are different, and I mean, there's a lot
I'm
of that that goes on here.
I'm laughing because it's in season two, but he's just like, wow, this one's faster than my own line. Wow! He just goes off and running. It's hilarious. I mean, you're absolutely right. We're sort of skipping ahead here, but, you know, if people will recall, Keith did not want to be the leader. Keith was willing to be led, but was more of a lone wolf. He wanted to be off on his own. He was kind of a sort of a dark samurai, if you will.
They actually joke about this. Like, when they're all sitting around the table trying to figure out where do we do from here, well, you know, Shiro wanted Keith to take the black line. No, Keith's the outsider. You know, Pidge is the brain, honks the muscle.
Right. You know, so he's taking the leadership under duress. It's not something he wants, which sometimes makes you the best choice. And then when he gets there, he's like, he's basically telling the rest of the pilots, fuck your couch. This is how I'm going to lead. You wanted me to lead? Well, this is how I'm going to lead, like an asshole. You know, and it's great, you know, to, as far as story development goes, it's great to watch him completely screw this up the first couple of go-arounds and then sort of ease into the role when he realizes he's going to get everyone killed if he continues to act like a complete idiot.
Yeah, and I just, if I'm not mistaken, I think we saw Lotor at this point, and how he is a magnificent bastard. And
yes,
also, I like that I'm pretty sure they are the reason Lotor is out, you know, out and about in the population, if I'm not mistaken.
Well,
yeah, Lotor was exiled prior to Zarkon's defeat.
Yeah, because I thought he was the one stuck in the worm.
No, he's not.
No.
They make it clear it was one of his lieutenants that was stuck in the worm, and I guess it was whatever season that was.
Season 2. Fun time.
Third attempt.
Fun times in that episode.
Fourth attempt. Hagar calls on Lotor at the end of season 2 when they have no leader because Zarkon's on life support. So he sort of shows up. But what you learn about Lotor over the course of this season is that he may be Zarkon's son, but he's no leader of this empire. He sort of has his own way of doing things, his own agenda. He's surrounded by half-breeds and, you know, and people who, you know, necessarily that are not the top of the food chain as far as what Zarkon sees as his best lieutenants. You know, he's got basically Lotor is surrounded by like a gang of ne'er-do-wells and whatnot, but they are dedicated to him and he is dedicated to them, and it made for an interesting they make for interesting villains throughout this season. Episode 2, Red Paladin, Team Voltron Shuffle, who now pilots the Lions. Keith takes the Black Lion. Lance takes over Keith's Red Lion. And Allura is chosen by the Blue Lion. Lotor traps the Paladins over Puega to study their team dynamic after Zarkon's defeat and pulls out after battle of learning what he wants to know. So this is, again, another episode sort of setting up the rest of what's left of the season. This is where we get our Hollywood Shuffle. As everyone sort of takes a step to the, everyone except for Pidge and Hunk takes a step to the left into new Lions or their first Lion. And I thought it was fun to see Lotor not necessarily want to engage Voltron in real battle, but more wanting to study them to see how did this group of nitwits take out my father. What's so good about them? You know, it shows that he's not the mustache twirly, you know, I must defeat and take over the universe type of villain, but more of a strategist, more of somebody who, you know, just lays in the cut, waiting for his opportunity, and is meanwhile smart enough to study his opponent to see what the weaknesses are. You know, he may have a plan to bop the man, but he still wants to know what he's dealing with and is willing to retreat and fight another day to know that he's probably going to win that day with the information he's gathered. Let's switch things up a bit. Winfrey, Red Paladin, go.
I can't remember if it's this episode or the previous one that actually has one of my favorite moments, actually. You touched on it when we talked about episode 1. There is the sense of these, you know, Voltron and the group trying to build a coalition, an alliance, they're trying to set up some form of government or peaceful coexistence after the Galra are dealt with. And everyone's kind of like trying to, you know, they're all mostly amicable, but they all want to see Voltron and they can't form Voltron. And Keith at one point loses it and says, you know, we can only be so many places. If you really want freedom that badly, you should fight for yourselves. And I loved that because there's a significant degree of truth to it. This one, there's a lot of interesting stuff just because you get Keith again struggling, you know, screwing up, trying to actually lead this group. they set up Lotor as an interesting individual in that the first couple of times he's just talked about before he really, as much as we do at least, get to know him as a character, they talk about him, you know, not following the same order that his father did, leaving systems to have some of their own self-governance. In any other series, this would be an obvious, like, bait and switch. Because, you know, he still has to either be the bad guy or he's just the put-upon good guy trying to fight for change within the Galra Empire. This show does such a great job with moral ambiguity and shades of gray that, A, you don't trust that he's really, you know, where exactly his loyalties or plans lie. And then the first few times you see him interacting with his group, that's just completely confirmed. In some respects, he might be a better choice than Zarkon, but this is not a good person. And his ability to strategize, which is, again, evidenced in their travel through that, you know, I forget which. It was Pug, right? Forgive me for not remembering off the top of my head. But there's a lot of gravitational interference and things don't always work the way they're supposed to. And he's one guy in one ship outmaneuvering and outfighting all five of the paladins. And you get a really decent sense about who he is, even if his plans are, even if we have no idea what types of plans he might be, you know, scheming and setting up. So it was a good introduction to some of the new dynamics that are going to be explored on the Voltron team and our new essentially primary antagonist, and that, you know, in many respects he's more dangerous than Zarkon.
Yeah, I really, really liked Lotor's presentation in season 3. You know, my struggle with Zarkon was he was exactly the kind of villain that you get in a lot of not just animated features, but even like Marvel movies and a lot of sci-fi action adventure. Yeah, you know, Zarkon was very much, I'm going to destroy everybody and take over the Empire, and I am singularly focused on this one thing. Lotor just seemed kind of Han Solo-y, you know? Just like I picture him just kicking back, surrounded by his ladies, going, "It's all chill, baby. I got this covered." You know, it's very rare you get to see that kind of a villain. That's usually reserved for a hero, because, you know, because that's the kind of people that, those are the kind of characters that I think people gravitate to. Again, with the exception of Robert Winfrey, everybody loves Han Solo, and he's got that sort of swarthy.
He's not like Han Solo.
He doesn't like anything Star Wars. That's not worth talking about. He's got that kind of swarmy coolness to him that makes for a very, very interesting villain. Go ahead, Robert. What are your thoughts here on Red Paladin?
Well, I feel like in terms of anime tropes, that's the cool villain that is obviously so much cooler than our protagonist, it's a trope that's used quite a bit, especially in a lot of your shonen anime. Like, look at Vegeta in Dragon Ball Z. He was a villain. He's a little more interesting than Goku in terms of internal motivation. I really like Lotor.
In terms of
and
everything,
really,
you mean?
Pretty much. It is true, even though he keeps getting taller as he gets as they keep going. He's supposed to be like 5'4", and they're like,
decisions made by the animators notwithstanding, the actual writing.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's a trope that's used often. You look at Sasuke Uchiha, he's set up as the secondary protagonist, but he later becomes antagonist, and then you have his brother. Anywho, I was really impressed by the more nuanced nature of Lotor, because I was expecting him to be a little more cunning, but not as, I guess, as intelligent, really. When he was like, you know, they should rule their own, they should pretty much rule their own stuff, we'll just kind of run it from behind. I'm like, ooh, this guy knows how this stuff works. How you actually kind of just get people used to subjugation. I was like, good on you, Lotor, good on you. And then I liked when he got back to the curtain, he goes, yeah, send that guy to like the shittiest place you can find.
He goes to Fairbanks, Alaska. or the rough equivalent thereof.
Send him to Detroit. No, not Detroit.
Oh, God. It'll be closed by the time he gets there. Okay. In terms of a villain, I feel like he's one of the almost the most the character that caught my interest the most coming in. Because, I mean, we already have our team of protagonists, which I really do feel benefit from the almost like in the way I think of it, more of an Avengers effect, that the fact we don't have to establish as much with most of them because they're already there. Now we got to see Pidge with her stuff with her brother. Or was that last season? No, was this season? Last season. Last season?
They let you know that it's still a thing in, I think, episode three. But they don't go we don't get too much into it here.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be brought up later on, but we got that, and Hunk is just, well, he's Hunk. But yeah, I mean, Allura's had to having to get used to actually having a lion and kind of living up to a part of her father's legacy in terms of actually being a pilot of one of them. I like the fact they gave an explanation to her wearing the pink rather than she's the girl.
Well, so let's talk about Allura. See, episode 3, The Hunted. Keith, in burning pursuit of Lotor, is easily tricked into following the prince to a storm planet where their sensors malfunction. Yes, it's the Kobayashi Maru. Or rather, it's the end of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Oh, gosh, the something nebula is what they fly into and nothing more.
Lotara.
Thank you. Keith's blind.
I don't even like Star Wars that much. Just such is my memory.
Star Trek, nerd.
Oh, did you just? Oh no!
Yeah,
you see, it's so easy to poke
there's
at these people.
Not, there's not. Are you doing that purposefully? Okay, sure.
I love when he beat the Cylons. That was my favorite episode of Firefly.
It's blind pursuit causes everyone to separate. I fucking hate you both. But Allura sinks with the blue lion and outmaneuvers Lotor to escape and form Voltron. And I'll form the head. Keith now focused
they had
on
that
new
joke.
And Keith now focused on his new responsibilities as the leader allows Lotor to escape as to regroup. So here, the big circle around this episode is Allura sinking with the blue lion and becoming one and then being able to reform Voltron with the new team. I'll let you keep going here, Mr. Cooper. What did you think of this one?
I liked it. Definitely one thing that I'm fond of is Keith kind of realizing that you can't be hyper-aggressive, especially when you're not messing with somebody like Zarkon, who you still had to use more espionage tactics with. But with Zarkon, he was much more of a, kind of just your classic brute force dictator. Whereas I feel like Lotar is more of a Machiavellian type. He has more of your Manchurian stuff. I love how I'm just mixing all my M-related references all together. I hope he's part of the monkeys, and they like to monkey around. But yeah, I also like that Allura actually got some shine. We got to finally see her at least pilot the damn thing correctly instead of running into, like, walls and stuff. Woman drivers, am I right?
Yeah, buddy. You know, one of the things I like about this is that they established early on that you have a psionic link with your lion and that if you and the lion are not on the same page, you will not have success piloting. The lion will not respond to you. And, you know, season 2 comes along and they're all pretty much experts with their lions. So they learn new things as it goes along. You know, apparently these Voltron lions have all kinds of hidden abilities and they've only begun to scratch the surface of what they are. But they could pilot them with ease. You know, the lions and the pilots have accepted one another. They have joined. Now, you tend to forget that as time goes on because, you know, how many times are you going to go over that same plot point? You got other shit you got to talk about. So it was kind of nice to revisit that idea because it's essential, number one. Number two, I really like it. I like the idea that these are not just cars, you know, that you jump into and, you know, and if you can drive them, great. If you can't, whatever. You know, that the lions are not necessarily sentient beings, but there's something along the lines of, you know, the third Star Wars reference of the night, everybody. There's something of a force. There's a supernatural pseudoscience entity that allows the lions on some level to connect with an organic being for them to pilot. They'll explain it to some degree or another in The Legend Begins, which is episode 7, our season finale. But I love that idea. You know, back in the day when George Lucas, who was a hack that we all hate because he doesn't know what he's doing and he doesn't understand how people work, came up with the idea of the Force before it was ruined with the idea of midichlorians. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it was this sort of
he originally had planned anyways.
Yeah. It was this sort of supernatural, semi-religious thing that was hard to quantify. And people love that about the Force. And you see it, you see the sort of kind of Force entity in Voltron. So there's something to be said for religious elements in your sci-fi, because we've seen it now and here and in other places, and people gravitate towards it. Winfrey, what do you have to say for yourself?
Very little. I think I covered a lot of what I wanted to say about this episode when talking about episode 2. I agree with you about there's, for some reason, and I don't know who propagated this or where it came about, but the notion that, well, it's science fiction, maybe it's because sci-fi and fantasy are generally cobbled together in terms of how we, you know, browse through categories, that everyone decided that, no, if you're science fiction, you can't have fantastical elements, and vice versa. Your fantasy must be set in the Iron Age, and your sci-fi must be set in space. Never mind that since you brought up Star Wars, never mind that Star Wars is not actually a science fiction movie.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And in fact, did irreparable damage to the whole genre.
You know what?
Another man's inspiration, sir.
Fantastic. I'm going to put down my gavel. I'm going to make you come up with a different reference. You're now banned from referencing Star Wars.
Okay.
It's not sci-fi. Come up with another one. Let's go.
Another what? Wait, hang on. Wait. Do you wish me to find another example that will reinforce my point about how fantastical elements can mix with science fiction?
Yes, sir. You're not allowed to reference Star Wars because it's not science fiction.
Fair enough. Believe it or not. Hang on. No. Believe it or not, Star Trek actually has a significant number of things that follow along the same line, despite Gene Roddenberry's adamant atheism. When you deal with elements in Star Trek that are beyond their understanding, the Q continuum, for example, it probably being the best example, there are characters that are empathic, there are characters that have various psychic abilities, again, Vulcan specifically with mind meld. There are these elements that are not that would not be out of place under, you know, a setting that was, you know, 800 BC, for example. And I've never quite sure where that whole divide came about and why it became so stringent, but it exists. And when you get shows that will actually monkey with it just a little bit, what you get is exceptional. Here, you know, the lions are not just, like you said, they're not just cars. This isn't Luke just jumping into an X-Wing. These are not completely living beings, but there is something more than machinery going on. They actually have individual, you know, quirks and characters and, you know, personalities to some extent, which is true of any, you know, mechanical object as it develops its own, you know, personality as such over extended use. But it's one of the better points in the show that, and it also serves as points for drama at various locations along the way. You know, you can't just teach someone else how to pilot a lion. You know, there's any number of people can be taught to pilot a spaceship. This is something completely different. And when you find someone who can do it, it's special and needs to be guarded as such.
Very good, sir. And I like the fact that you didn't mistakenly call Star Trek Star Wars this time, or vice versa. Moving on.
It's just so easy. It's so easy to poke at you people.
Yeah,
well,
people
hey,
and you
that,
people.
That is the basis of the entire reason why most fans are fans, is because you're like, excuse me, sir. The Green Lantern is Kyle Rayner.
Well, technically, episode 4, Hole in the Sky. What am I doing here? All right. The team comes across an Altaian vessel lodged in spatial anomaly and pass through it to study. Upon crossing, they find they entered another universe where the Altaians defeated the Galra 10,000 years ago, but have conquered the known universe to bring peace. Ah, yes, peace through war. They learn that a comet with multidimensional properties is made of the same material that makes up Voltron, and I'll form the head. And if the mirror Altaians get it, they'll go into other universes, conquering them as well. The team, alongside the guns of Gamora, made up of Slav and Sven, Shiro's mirror counterpart.
I was so happy to see him back.
Work to steal the comet and return to their prime reality. Upon returning, Lotor takes the comet with ease from the tired Paladins. All right, Giggles, go ahead. So why don't you respond to what's going on here in episode 4. Winfrey, your giggles. You're the one that was giggling.
No, I was just really happy to see Slog back. Our friend who loves talking about multidimensional realities. He was hilarious. He was my favorite part of season 2.
Yeah, that's a fun character. But what did you think of this overall? I like the idea that we are now so comfortable with Voltron and this universe that they're doing the old Star Trek thing of going into parallel universes, which can get confusing very quickly, but they handle it well. You know, and it's funny, you know, again, Star Trek references. I think the first time Star Trek does it, the Klingons have been defeated because I keep yelling Enterprise in my mind, but it's not Enterprise. It's Starfleet. Fuck me. Starfleet has become an empire. You know, now it's the Empire, not Starfleet. And they have conquered all these races. And it's a very similar idea of, you know, peace through war. And, you know, it's a trope you see a lot in science fiction, obviously. So a little gimmick there from Tuesday. In any case, I enjoyed the idea of it's the Altaians now who feel, you know, with righteous indignation, go around conquering places to save everyone from the terror that was and could be the Galra. And again, it's, you know, this is, you are no different than the Galra of all universe. Terrorism is terrorism. Imperialism is imperialism. It's all the same stuff, no matter how you paint it. So again, I toss it back to you, Winfrey. Hot potato, here we go. What did you think of this episode?
Maybe I've just absorbed too much fiction, but this was really obvious. And I don't mean that. That's not the biggest of negatives. Sometimes doing what everyone expects is the correct thing to do. Here it's just a further object lesson about, and mostly for the princess who, you know, was barely kind of over the reality that, well, we'll be working with, you know, this renegade faction of Galra at the end of season 2. And, oh, Keith, he's, you know, half Galra or whatever. And she was like, just kind of coming to grips with the fact that not all Galra are necessarily the scum of the earth. Now getting a look, getting a good look in the mirror of, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. And that's what she gets here. That's what the princess gets here in. No, we could very easily become everything we are fighting against with just, you know, one slip. We're all right. It's not that we are not nearly so different as we thought we were. You know, it's not nearly that black and white. And I liked the execution. I got a serious kick out of Shiro's accent. I also got a significant... I told you I loved I forget the guy's name, but I love that character because, A, anyone who talks about alternate realities and metaphysics to an audience that just like kind of smiles and nods rather than actually understands, there's inherent comedy there. So seeing him back was great. And then he actually gets a great line as they're about to... right before they break out where, you know, they've all been captured, but they've planned for this, and he kind of starts laughing. And what are you laughing about? Because this is the reality where everything works out okay. And then, you know, I love that. I laughed. It was hilarious. And totally in character for him.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. And again, as much as it is like done everywhere, characters being forced to look into that dark mirror, when done right, can be quite entertaining.
Yes, it's certainly been
plus,
done.
Plus, it's going to set up, Lotor's own, like, Voltron that he's going to wind up creating from that.
Yeah, that seems to be where we're headed, but we're also jumping ahead of ourselves. All right, you, Jokey McGee, what's your take on Hole in the Sky?
Take me to heaven. Oh, we weren't making that reference. Okay. He should call it Lotron. I'm just saying. I already got the name.
Yeah,
Lotron.
You could just put the T.
Yes. Writers,
yep,
you can have that
TM.
One for free.
Yep, TM. Just put a little thank you. Just put a little thank you right there in the credits. I'll make sure I don't notice it as I'm watching because I don't notice credits unless it's in Japanese and I have to go look it up. Anywho, this episode, this is the one I woke up during, so I was like, fuck, I got to watch this again. Because fucking work, man. I was so fucking happy to see fucking ferret cat worm guy. That was pretty cool.
I told you, he's the best.
And then he's like, because, you know, we had all this talk about alternate universes, and, you know, you just kind of think he's a kook. And then what do you know? Alternate universes, he's aware.
He's the crazy one
oh,
now.
Shit. Yeah, I was like, whoa. And hey, maybe that crazy chick I went out with about last year was on to something. Oh, that girl. God, she was fucking mentally ill.
Hey, this is not the Metal Hammer of Doom. No, we'd have no time for your sidebars.
Oh, there's always time for the sidebar. Besides, you're an LCSW. I'm sure you could figure out what she's got. We'll get out the book.
Okay.
Anyhow.
Do you have anything else to say about Hole in the Sky? Otherwise, I'm moving this operation on.
I like how they started to set everything up and managed to get the plot of a alternate reality, pretty much an alternate universe sort of story, moving as well as a thing that affects the plot. Because a lot of times it's just the writers being like, hey guys, what did this happen? And everybody's like, I like it. It means that we can kind of fuck around and it's all going to be a dream.
And you were there, and you were there. Yeah, this is where we start to shift gears away from, you know, getting things situated for the season into, well, what is this season about? And this season is about exactly what you said. Lotor creating his own iteration of the Voltron weapon, the legendary defender, with what we'll learn is quintessence, which is part of the comet or some such thing. In any case, in the meantime, we have episode 5 as we bear down on the end of this season. Shiro is not dead.
Frodo lives. Shiro wakes up with longer hair, and this is called The Journey, by the way.
The beard
with longer, yes, and facial hair in a Galra cruiser and escapes. Unbeknownst to him, the commander speaks of an Operation Curon, K-U-R-O-N, where they let him escape. Shiro then lands on an ice planet and meets two rebels who give him a shuttle. Shiro uses the shuttle to stealthily reboard the cruiser and makes his way to Voltron. After a week of open travel in space, Keese finds Shiro and takes him home. I'm not going to lie, I don't remember anything about this episode. I mean, I remember Shiro escaping the shuttle. I remember Shiro being found, and that's about all I got. So what do you got for me, Robert Cooper?
Which one? Okay. Good thing
I already said which one. Jesus.
Oh, well, you said it as I said it, because great minds think alike.
Yeah, I said it.
So,
that's okay.
I really enjoyed this episode. I like episodes that take you away from the status quo in a way and put focus on another character that we've not seen in a while or gives us a different perspective. What they did in this episode was really kind of get us back to getting used to Shiro and kind of seeing what he's gone through, even though, I mean, dude's been through a lot already. And not only that, we got cool side characters again. Like, they did a really good job of just making quirky and fun side characters. Like, even like the enemy general, you're like, oh, that guy, okay. Even though he gets his like arm ripped off and murdered. But I was like, okay, that guy, I remember him. Yeah. I like that Shiro was not floating in the depths of space, even though I kind of figured they were going to find him. Again, wouldn't that just be a nice little thing? Maybe it's because this is technically a kid show that they did find him. Because if this were some movies I've seen, he just, you know, it was all for nothing. Those are my favorite films, anyways. But it all ended up being for nothing, and the audience leaves pissed off and whiny. Yeah, but otherwise, I really like the episode. I feel like him coming. I don't remember if it was at the end of the episode or the beginning of the next episode where he cut his hair and his beard and kind of came back. I wanted him to keep that 90s Superman look for a while. You know, not quite mullet, but still. He came back from his sleeping pod, rejuvenated and sad. I'm wondering how it affected him, because you notice like the tone in his voice sounds a little more reserved, or at least I think so. I feel that there's a little bit more reservation in that. So I'm interested in seeing what they're going to do with it.
Winfrey, Robert?
I'm waiting for Shiro to be a clone.
Oh, God. I didn't want to go up to that
room. I'm not even joking. Like, so much of the setup here was, again, finding out what happened to Shiro. But given his lack of memories about what the immediate aftermath of what happened to him, they could easily have been implanted.
And the lion doesn't like him anymore.
They could easily have been implanted, and we're dealing with some type of cloning technology.
It's a fake.
My vote for what's wrong with Shiro is that he's they've got some sort of bug on him, or you know, they let him go because he's going to lead the Galra to Voltron's ship. You know, or you know, they'll always be able to find where they are because they've got a tracking thing on him. That's my vote. But you're probably
something
right
like
also
that.
You're probably right also with he's a clone. You know, I mean, he could be both. He could be a clone with a tracking device, and they've got the real Shiro in a refrigerator somewhere.
Or the real Shiro died.
Well, that could
in
also
a refrigerator.
Be true. In a refrigerator next to the eggs.
Beyond speculation about that character, I didn't hate it. I kind of liked the two rebel guys manning that outpost, who are, you know, sufficiently weird. I think one of them actually gets the line, you know, no, only a crazy person would believe that. And I was crazy enough to volunteer to be on this hellhole, but I'm not quite crazy enough to buy that.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I remember them now. They were rather amusing. All right,
Do you realize you gave him our only shuttle, right?
I was about to quote that. And he's just like, nah, whatever.
This case, rah, rah. All right. Episode 6, Tailing a Comet. Lotor and his four generals attack a Galra base to steal a Teledov lens. This is from the Blackout episode. And the team barely survive a battle with Lotor's forces. When Keith is confronted with the difficult choice of pursue Lotor or destroy the Teledov, he tricks Lotor's generals into a shoot and miss, destroying the Teledov and leaving Lotor open to attack. All right, Winfrey, keep it going for me.
I really liked... There's something about the... Okay. Stop, rewind. Make my point clear here. There's something great about our protagonists in this show in the sense that 90% of the time they don't know what they're doing. And I don't mean that in the sense that, okay, we're learning on the job. I mean, okay, they know they're fighting the Galra because they are the oppressive force and they're, you know, they're the bad guys. We're going to fight them. But they have no earthly idea what's going on. They almost represent, I feel, segments of the audience that just, like, love simpler times. You know, they want – all we want is our, you know, our good guys to be good, our bad guys to be bad. We show up. We fight them wherever they are. And constantly these poor guys who are out here risking life and limb for the welfare of the universe don't quite seem to get it. They're struggling to, you know, again, build any kind of – alliance or coalition behind their force because, well, none of them have done it before. They're not diplomats. And now it's like, okay, we should do this because it will stop the Galra from doing anything evil. And that's good. Yeah, that's good. And then, no, wait, Lotor's actually just straight up attacking other Galra. And they're all kind of like, and they all actually like reference, like, what's going on here? This doesn't make sense. And I love that they are constantly on the back foot, despite being – I mean, you have to put the heroes in peril somehow, otherwise there's no point. And I like the choice was that the choice was made to – rather than try and sell each and every – you know, each and every week, they're going to fight something bigger and badder than last week, so tune in. They go about it in a much more realistic fashion of these guys just have no intelligence, not in that they're stupid, but they have no – military intelligence. They have no sense of the greater universe here. There's so much that just happens that they are either unaware of or unable to affect. And despite having the most powerful weapon in the known universe, they are unable to really like make any significant progress towards fixing anything. It's great. I liked Keith. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just going to say I agree with you. Thank you for letting me butt in. I was just going to say that I really agree with you. I like the fact that they are sort of stumbling through all of this. They don't always have all the right answers. They are often just sort of doing things by the seat of their pants because they don't have all the information, and they think they're operating in full view and sight of what the mission is and often are dead wrong. So... You know, it makes for interesting television because you're like, well, how is this band of misfits going to get through this?
The other couple of things I liked that in the beginning, you know, there's a little bit of drama about, well, there's now 6 paladins and only 5 lions, so who's getting the short end of the stick here? And I liked that, you know, when Keith tried to step aside, it just didn't work that way.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I like Shiro
was
better
at the end where he sets up, okay, I can either chase the big bad guy or I can stop stop his plan. And that's a very tough position to put someone in who isn't used to big picture thinking. And the fact that he finally, you know, this was the payoff of his, you know, struggling to really formulate plans in a leadership role. Here he actually does it and does a pretty good job because the way he suckers them into shooting it themselves is actually like the best way for them to have avoided taking retaliation damage. It actually, like, that's the one time we see Lotor upset, because finally we've upset a bit of his apple cart. But now, again, my favorite thing is just that these guys have access to all power, you know, a significant amount of it, and they just are blind leading the blind, kind of bumbling their way through trying to save the universe.
All I was going to add to that was I think we can all agree that it was an interesting bit of plot to see, and character development to see the Black Lion reject Shiro, as if to say, you've had your time, it's someone else's time now. This team needs a different leader, even if he's not a great leader right now. It's the leader we need, not the leader we deserve.
He may be a hothead, but he's our hothead.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that about, and it's funny because whatever ends up happening with Shiro, the fact that he's in more of like a consultant, leader on the bridge, general kind of a role. I'm interested to see how they handle that. I'm interested to see what they do with the character in that role. Go ahead, Cooper. What was your thoughts on this episode?
I was going to say, actually, on that, him being the consultant, I feel like that's perfect. Because it makes it to where he's less active in the actual participation. But at the same time, he can still give advice, he can lead, and he can affect what the other character's doing, even if he's not one of the Lions anymore.
He can dance
but
if he wants to.
He can leave, but he won't leave his friends behind.
No, he won't.
His friends will
very
dance.
Good. And if they don't dance, then they're no friends
dance.
Of mine.
That's right.
Well, you really forced that one.
Yeah, whatever.
That's what we're here for. We're here to force it.
Oh, obviously.
Man. But anywho, this episode, I like that they got one up on Lotor, because Lotor is one of those guys that, like, yeah, he's the schemer. He's always got more information than the other people. He's got a plan. He knows what he's doing, and he knows how to get what he wants. And the fact that he used a super pew-pew laser and missed and ended up hitting, spoiling his own plan, was really nice. It was really good to see them finally kind of outfoxing him, even if I don't know if it will be a regular thing, and I doubt it will be, but it was good to see the heroes finally kind of outthinking him for once. But it was a good episode, and I feel like it was a good way to resolve kind of the mini plot of this arc, because the next episode is, I mean, very important and sets things up actually really well and gives us a lot of future plot information, but it's told through, it's told in the past. So, yeah.
The word you're looking for is flashback. At the castle, and this is this is episode 7, our season finale. The legend begins. At the castle, Korn explains to everyone the true origin of Voltron. King Alphar and Zarkon, despite differences between their peoples, worked united in the defense of their kingdoms. When celebrating a battle victory on Zarkon's homeworld of Dubai, a comet lands not far from them, made from multidimensional properties, which Alphar used to build Voltron, defender of the universe, and all formed the head. When evil erupted, Alphar and Zarkon came to pilot the red and black lions respectively, along with their friends Trudy and
Rudy,
Giselle.
Fruity, Rudy, and Booty, right?
Fruity, Rudy, and Booty. I'm not reading all these. But Zarkon's wife, Altinian alchemist Harnerva, had been poisoned by the close studies of the quintessence, brought upon them by studying the space drift where the comet landed. Zarkon then tricks the original paladin to take him and his wife into white space. Why does it got to be white?
a reality of pure quintessence, to restore his beloved wife. Instead, both are killed and are resurrected by Dark Quintessence from another universe into the Emperor Zarkon and Witch Hagar, which they are today. To close the portal for the protection of everyone, Alford destroyed Zarkon's homeworld and everybody on it, where the Rift resided, and was killed by the corrupted Zarkon and scattering the lions. Afterwards, the team pieces together Lotor's plan based on recent events. And here we go. This is the plan to bop the man right here. Gather the purest quintessence possible. Hagar remembers what her husband did to revive her and restores Zarkon to consciousness. So, we are left with the following. Lotor's plan is to get the quintessence because he's going to use it to create some sort of thing to battle Voltron. As Robert Cooper indicated before, maybe it'll be Lotron, the evil Voltron. And Zarkon has come back to us. So we're going to get some sort of weapon that Lotor is going to create in Season 4, and we're going to get Zarkon and whatever friction resides between father and son. And I'm sure there's going to be something there, because why would you do it unless there was? All right, Winfrey, take me home.
I liked this episode. It is, you know, exposition is an important facet of, you know, any storytelling, especially in a universe as potentially rich as this one is. I liked seeing, you know, these characters that we either only know in one context or, you know, haven't met at all in some cases, getting that backstory. I liked that, you know, one of the things we talked about with Zarkon to begin with was, well, he's a little, you know, mustache twirly. At the same time, he actually does have some character, even as a villain, because he's not, you know, he's not just twirling his mustache. He's, you know, in the first season, he's just kind of the antagonist, but it's established that he was, you know, a former paladin, that he did pilot the Black Lion, that he wants that back. And here you get to see some of the genesis of that, how, you know, it's a rather, you know, well-used trope, but, you know, the good man gone bad. How initially he and, you know, the other king just have different, you know, they just have different methodologies of ruling. Neither one of them is necessarily this, you know, evil scumbag. They just approach things a little bit differently. And how he could then be, you know, moved from being a good man into, you know, the force of evil that, you know, he is in, as we've known him in the season. It was nice to see, I forget his name, but we didn't get hammy with this. We got well-traveled material, but none of it was, you know, too stupid. Everyone's decisions were in character. Everything that they, you know, everything made sense as far as that being, you know, set up. So I liked it. I liked the setup for what will wind up being the next, you know, half. I think of it as half of this season, but we are well set up for our, you know, finale as far as that goes.
All right, Robert Cooper. Let's have your piece, and then we will end this podcast.
Oh, boy. I like peace. Peace in our time. Yeah, it was really interesting to see kind of the backstory of the characters, of some of our characters, as told in flashback. Credit to Mark Resnich. Yeah,
you're welcome.
Sometimes you do some good things there, Maki. You do a good job. But yeah, it was interesting to see, like, oh, hey, so this is who this witch bitch is. This is who she is, this Archon. Cool, because then at the end when she's like, my husband, I'm like, oh, they just revealed that. It's like, thanks, guys. Yeah, you get to see kind of this is what we're going for in this series. And I really feel like in terms of a final
arc, this could really be something that could be long lasting. English language. I feel like it could be long lasting because who knows how long it's going to take to get pure quintessence, even though I'm sure it will not take them long. Just seeing at the pace of
less than seven episodes, if I had to guess.
This whole plot's going to be drawn out over 20 seasons. We're still trying to get the quintessence.
They're going on that Naruto speed. Oh, hey, kids, you want a year of filler episodes? We got it. God, that is
I don't
hell.
Know what any of that is.
His metaphor is accurate. That's all that matters.
It's a show that instead of putting gaps between seasons to like catch up with the source material, they just created a year of episodes that did not matter.
Horrific.
So it's so awful.
See what you're saying.
As I was saying before, I rudely interrupted myself. That's the story of my life. Excuse me, me. I was saying, meet the real me. I have ramen hair.
Stop, I don't want to go down this silly rabbit hole. Come on, this is TV party tonight. No silliness allowed.
Hey, at least you're not singing yet. So we got there.
Nope.
That was last night.
Don't make me do it.
Because you're awake now. I'm not struggling to stay awake.
No, I'm not struggling to stay awake tonight. Come on. All right, finish up, man.
All right. So, yeah, in terms of an ending episode, I think it left us with something that's not quite as, let's say, as explosive in terms of overall events, but it's more explosive in the details. So, like, the little things, for example, like, I was just wondering, so was that destroyed planet that we saw in the worm episode, the destroyed planet that was, like, whatever the fuck the Zarkon world is?
I called it Dubai, because I wasn't pronouncing whatever the fuck that word was. So, in theory, that was Dubai.
Okay. Dubai. That reminds me of that awful joke I heard once of people in Dubai don't like the Flintstones, but people in Abu Dhabi do.
Abu Dhabi do!
Abu
Dhabi do! We're getting silly again.
I'm the one running out of sleep. I think it's one of those, it's going to be very interesting. And I mean, hey, October is not that far away. It is, before we know it, we're going to be like, well, shit, here we are again, another six episodes.
Yep. Before we know it, Robert Winfrey is going to have to review Geostorm and the new Blade Runner. And, oh, gosh, what else are we reviewing in October?
Jigsaw, I think.
Fucking Jigsaw. Ugh, I ruined my own
bit
there.
Hey. If I got to sit through Geostorm, you can sit through Jigsaw. Bear in mind, I anticipate hating Jigsaw.
What is Geostorm, and why does it sound awful?
It's a crappy movie, and it is awful.
Can I handle this? Hello? Can I handle this, please? So Geostorm is a movie about a weather satellite that controls all the weather around the world, and somehow it goes kaflooey. And
it is
starts
hacked.
Creating.
It is explicitly hacked.
Okay, it's hacked and goes
by the Russians.
And
by parties on.
It starts creating all kinds of crazy weather events that pretty much bring on the end of the world. It looks fantastic.
No,
it turns the frickin' frogs gay.
It is awful. It is just going to be awful.
So your whole month of October is gonna suck.
I actually enjoy disaster porn. I'm on record. Like, I can enjoy those types of movies. I don't think anything good is going to come out of this movie.
Let's see. Tuesdays look like this in October. Winfrey and I are going to be doing a TV party tonight for Hannibal Season 1.
Yay!
Then we're doing a
Sean going to be on that?
Then we're doing...
What?
I can't remember if Sean's either Sean or Benjamin might want in on that. I know Benjamin's a big fan of Hannibal.
I don't know. Why are you interrupting me to bring in things I don't know? Why? I don't understand you.
Because Sean Comer is ever important, sir.
Sure. And then the following Tuesday is our review of Blade Runner 2049. The following week is our TV party tonight, where we'll all get together again for Voltron Season 4, all 7 episodes of it. And then Geostorm, and then Jigsaw on Halloween. I'm going to take my kids trick-or-treating, and then at whatever time we get home, half an hour to an hour after whatever time I get home from trick-or-treating, or work, whichever comes first, we're going to review fucking Jigsaw. Oh, boy.
You set the parameters as large releases into franchises. Not my fault it qualifies.
You're absolutely right about that, sir. By the way, the next night is our Halloween show, Robert Cooper, for the Metal Hammer of Doom. We're going to review the Master Plan album, Pumpkins, which is basically all Halloween covers, from what I understand.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You only get to pick two shows between now and the end of December because of stuff like this. Hot dog, right?
Hey, you love your gimmick weeks.
I do love my gimmick weeks. All right, back to the present day. Anything else, sir? You have anything else of relevance to add to this last episode, The Legend Begins?
It was cool to see that.
Sorry, go ahead, Cooper.
You're good. It was just cool to see that Zarkon wasn't an evil. Total evil dick. He was kind of a cool guy in a way, so you could see why he was a black paladin. That was nice. It was also nice to see that the bonds between the lions kind of slowly broke away. It wasn't just like, now everybody hates each other. Ta-da! Like, it was nice. It's nuanced, I'm not used to nuance in television these days. So he's like smack. But I'm done.
Final word, Winfrey. Go.
It's worth bringing up again. I think we did when we had the first season discussion. This is the same group of animators and writers, and it's the same people that were behind Avatar: The Last Airbender. Which was conceived with a very specific beginning, middle, and end point. Which was great, because it meant it didn't drag. It meant that they knew where they were going, they knew how they wanted to get there. And, you know, as an audience, you didn't have to worry about this being drug on for 13 seasons. And I get the distinct impression that there's a very similar setup here. There's a very specific beginning, middle, and end that exists within the minds of the people behind this. And I don't know how far along we are in that, but at a minimum, we are setting up for the end of what I would imagine is the second act. If the first two seasons are the first act of, you know, set up, introducing characters, you know, we do not a complete reset, but, you know, we shuffle things around. We're now building towards, you know, the big showdown between all three parties. The potential existing for maybe, you know, one more really good go-around of, you know, a season or two, depending on length. And the fact that it has, again, to as near as I can tell, these set parameters, this beginning, middle, end, here's the notes we want to hit, so on and so forth, it makes everything better, for my money. I enjoy things more when that's obvious. You know, things have bigger stakes, more consequences. You have to deal with less filler. In the case of certain shows, whole seasons of filler. The plot doesn't get lost. The narrative doesn't start wandering into obscure places because we have to fill 24 episodes. And Supernatural, I am looking squarely at you, by the way.
How is that show still going?
The CW is hard up for content. I don't know.
That's true. They pretty much have like DC properties
that and woman
aren't
shows.
Very good. So, no, my point, yeah, because that's on, like, its 13th or – it's stupid long. Just stupid.
13th, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it should have – they really should have wrapped that after 5. And my point being, we're not really in danger of having that same
family.
Problem here because there is a specific end point. So, enjoy it while we've got it as far as, you know, newness. But since I think of this as half a season – it was a pretty good half season. I'm looking forward to the other half.
All right. Sorry, I'm listening to you. I'm multitasking. All right, so we already talked about when the next season is going to be. It's going to be in October. October is going to be a pretty loaded month. The rest of August and September, a little less loaded, thank God. it's been an interesting year, folks. But... I think let's do some last words here. Overall, what did you think of the season, Winfrey? Just in a big general sense, give me 50 words on how you thought this abbreviated season went down.
I think it was an effective soft reset. I don't think it because, you know, we're not starting from scratch here. But they shuffled the characters and roles around. They introduce new characters and they've effectively set up the big confrontations that are coming. I wish I had the rest of the season right now because I'm just kind of like that. But on the, you know, on balance, especially if you go into it kind of understanding that no, this is just prelude. This is just, you know, it's a lot of setup. It's good. It's very good setup.
Okay. Robert?
Oh, boy. So, as somebody that had to wait 3 years to get Attack on Titan Season 2, I am totally cool with only having to wait 2 months to get the other, like, more of this story. I'm cool with that. It's okay. So, yeah, overall, I like that they've found a nice narrative way to get our Voltron lions into the hands of their rightful original 84 anime protagonists. Which is Netflix kept recommending me that. So, like, if you like Voltron Legendary Defender, you'll like Voltron 84. I'm like, thanks, guys. Nobody in Japan cared about this anime. I like our new enemy is interesting. I'm really excited to see what he's going to do. And I'm really interested in seeing how our heroes are going to react because, I mean, you can start seeing, you can see that Keith is starting to really come into his own as a leader. And, you know, there's still some stuff up with Zero. Now that you guys have mentioned he could be a clone, I'm like, he could be a clone. I want that to happen now. Even though I don't, because I like Zero. He's a nice guy. He's got fucked around enough in his life. But I think he's just the punching bag of the show.
Okay. I'll just give,
no,
I'll
you see, when this
Zero
dies, they'll just release another one, and the cycle will start again.
If you make that fucking Dean Ambrose joke, I'm going to run to Utah and punch you. And I still am not up to – I did better today. We actually did a bit of our normal routine, Jonas and I. But so help me God, vomit and all, taking – I will live on Zofran and Compazine and Phenergan, and I will fight my way. I am stubborn as a mule, and I've already beat cancer. I will fight my way to Utah and punch you squaw in the mush.
Now, I imagine that if you were
joke,
to attempt that,
is there a
just,
potted
the,
plant?
I mean, come on, you're
you
not going to run
both
across.
Talk at the same time, Robert Winfrey. Since it's you, I'm threatening. You get the first shot at this. Go.
I'm less worried about you running all the way to Utah and punching me in the mush because should you attempt that, you would likely wind up as dead as Dean Ambrose. But their cyborg they would replace you with would probably succeed.
Oh, you bastard. Now you can talk, Mr. Cooper, for fuck's sake.
I was just confused as to the Dean Ambrose joke, but...
very briefly, hang on. I'll do this. Very briefly. You know what, 2 years ago, when Seth Rollins curb-stomped him through a cinder block, a joke got made that no human could survive that. That would actually be fatal. So Dean Ambrose was murdered on national television, and they They went to the depths of Pittsburgh and found John Moxley to replace him on television.
And then
eventually replaced him with a robot.
That is fucking rich. I remember when he got murdered on TV and then came back, like, you know, like.
You know, so Dean Ambrose is dead,
fucking...
and we don't know which version of the Ambrose bot we're on. And Mark hates the joke.
I mean, if I was going to go on the one, I feel like it's the one, the animatronic one from the Chuck E. Cheese that they got rid of because it wasn't very funny. God, Comedy Ambrose is just so sad. Like, it's cool, like, when there's a potted plant involved and everything, but seriously, guys. Like, just don't.
Are we done with this bit now?
As done as Dean Ambrose is breathing.
Flames on the side of my face. All right. Let's be done here. All right. As far as the calendar goes, let's go ahead and do plugs. We are done for the week here. Go ahead and check out our shows, Metal Hammer of Doom. I rushed through yesterday's show because I was so tired. Today I'm much better. The day before that was the Dark Tower. I actually made it to that show. I was absent from the week before. And on Monday the 7th, I sang through Voltron from the Ashes because I was a silly goose. Next week, no Monday show that I'm aware of, though that doesn't mean I won't be busy doing stuff. On Tuesday, Damn You Hollywood, we'll be doing our summer wrap-up special. On Wednesday, the Metal Hammer of Doom will be reviewing Except the Rise of Chaos. And then there's Defenders Week, Defenders/Daredevil. On Monday, Source Material, Daredevil, Guardian Devil, which was actually penned by Kevin Smith of Clerks fame. On Tuesday, Robert Winfrey and I will be talking The Defenders, TV Party Tonight, The Defenders. On Wednesday, KMFDM will be doing it again, A Treat for the Freaks, Truth or Dare. If you don't know, we don't care. Fuck. Anywho. And then the next night, capping off Defenders/Daredevil Week, we've got the original Daredevil movie featuring Ben Affleck.
It's awful.
Robert Cooper. Ugh. Robert Cooper, your plug,
Ooh, that's
sir.
Me.
Go. That's
oh,
you,
boy,
buddy.
In the middle. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. This is the Metal Hammer Doom. It's a thing. I'm on it every Wednesday, even when I'm at work, which I think I close next Wednesday, so that'll be like a 10 o'clock show, if you can make it. If I can make it. If somebody can make it. Make it. So, yeah.
What's
going to
be – I got distracted by something. What's a 10 o'clock show?
I said next Wednesday I close, so I'll be free at 10.
You'll
but
miss
I'll be free
the
to be
show.
At work. Well, yeah, it depends on what forklifting needs to be done.
You know what's crazy is you actually are the reason we're doing the Accept album. I put that on the calendar for you because you wanted to do it, and now you're going to miss half the show. God damn it.
Hey, don't blame me. Blame Niblock. Fuck you, Liz.
Well,
fucking ass what?
I'm going to blame somebody.
All right, well, just blame him. He's got millions, and he's going to make it off me. But anywho, so yeah, that's a thing. Censor Rider Podcast, your home for all things Tokusatsu that I haven't done a podcast of in 2.5 years. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Censor Rider Podcast. It is SENTAIRIDER Podcast. Let's see, third thing, W2Mnet.com, my buddy Sean Garmer, his website. I occasionally write wrestling articles and like one or two game reviews a year. Yeah, we share podcasting content with them as well. So, check them out on Spreaker.com, and we'll have some of our stuff up on there, too. And finally, final thing, scrapingthebottom.com. It's my buddy Kevin Merrill. I was just on his podcast, and it's going to be posted this week and next week to where I just shoot the shit with some guys. And, yes, I am shooting the shit. I'm damn good at shooting the shit. So, yeah, find it. Listen to it. Love it. Cherish it. Tell me what got censored. That's all.
Terrific. All right, you who have to cover this ridiculous spectacle that is Mayweather versus McGregor, do your thing, but do it in less than 2 minutes.
I have most of the month of August off, except for, as Mark alluded to, Mayweather versus McGregor. Let's just see how many dumbasses are out there. Spoiler alert, there's a lot.
Woo!
Don't woo. I told you, don't woo this. Just don't. There's nothing woo-worthy about that endeavor. Absolutely nothing.
Woo-hoo!
Stop it. So, anyway, when that rolls around on the 26th, you can find me probably in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com covering it. Yay me. It's gonna suck. Consequently, the 411 Ground and Pound radio show is taking a couple of weeks off. We'll be back. If I'm feeling ambitious on the 20th to do a serious preview of Mayweather-McGregor, which will last all of like 5 seconds and consist of me and Pat Mullen laughing uproariously at everyone who thinks Conor McGregor has anything approaching a significant chance of winning.
God, there's so many people, too. I think it's so funny.
How can you be that stupid and live? Really? However, we will be back the 27th. We will recap Mayweather-McGregor for those interested and preview Fight Night 115, Volkov versus Struve. Other than that, it's a lot of me and Mark.
You love it. You want to bathe in it.
Sounds hairy.
No comment. So you can look forward to us, you know, this coming Tuesday. We have our big summer review where we talk about how the summer was for movies. Here's a hint. Here's a preview. It sucked.
It stinks.
I mean, come on, Mark. Even you can't spin this all that well. I mean, you're actually the one who brought it up. Like, no, this hasn't been a good year.
No. Last year was the summer that the, you know, on all the headlines, it was the summer that the studios wanted to forget. And no, this year is even worse. Last year had multiple successes. This one had
2017 said, "Hold my beer."
Exactly. Nothing could be worse than the summer of 2016. 2017, hold my beer.
2018 is around the corner going, oh, you poor bastards.
Oh, 2018 looks absolutely fucking atrocious.
But are we going to get Annabelle 3?
Stop it. So anyway, a lot of that, again, the TV parties that Mark mentioned, so you can look forward to me on those. That's basically it. So, Mark, you and I are going to be seeing a lot of each other. A lot.
Indeed. Well, that's how things go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've had enough. So, with that said, we're going to do a little, since I have it here, and why not, I have some special closing music tonight. For the metal coop, Robert Cooper. For the little less metal, Robert Winfrey. The host of... what do you host? The host of the 411 Ground and Pound radio show, and damn you, Hollywood in his own right. And a pretty cool fruit who really knows where his towel's at. This has been TV Party.
Okay, wait. I have one. Hang on. Before you actually sign off.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'll be brief. Since you like throwing the 50s slang around every now and then, just to kind of prove how old you are, I would like to challenge you to. I would like to challenge you to ask your father about slang that was popular in the 30s and utilize that next time.
I don't know if he'll be able to answer me. My father's sort of a nerd in the sense that, like, he was into smart stuff and wasn't really into cultural, hip cultural things around his time. And he's also not, how old is he now? He's like 69 years old, so I don't know where that would put him. He more of a child of the 50s than anything else, if I'm doing
fine.
My math correctly.
And I was making a joke about, you know, how old you are and then therefore how old your father would have to be. So
I completely fucked that up. Sorry.
Okay, so in a more straightforward sense, you like utilizing obscure slang on occasion. I know you do, and that I would like you to go back to like the 30s and 40s and utilize slang from that era the next time you feel compelled to utilize outdated slang.
What outdated slang did I use? I called you a pretty cool brute who really knows where his towel's at. I copped that from the galaxy.
I'm just going with it's outdated.
Okay. But now I'm confusing history of the world with Guardians of the Galaxy. What am I actually talking about? See, this is what chemo does to you people. You lose language altogether.
Wild personality shifts as well. It's a nasty thing.
It's terrible. What is it where they're trying to build a super space highway through the British dude's thing, and it's got the Vogons in it, and there's a whole like travel book about it, and
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Thank you, Jesus! I couldn't think of it. Yes, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is where they say things like "You're a pretty cool fruit who really knows where his towel's at." Is that what you're thinking is my obscure cultural reference?
Wasn't that first published in like the 70s?
Yeah.
Outdated cultural reference.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on TV Party tonight. It's been a fucking gas. We'll see you next time.
I'm gassy.
Wait a minute. Be well, be safe, and behave. Now we can go.